You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. The Malaysian Social Research Institute, or MSRI, is a non-profit organization that runs the Sahabat Support Center. Known as the SSC for short, they provide services to refugees from minority communities who are living in Malaysia waiting to be resettled in a third country. This World Refugee Day, I chat with Yolanda Lopez, who's the program officer at the MSRI, about the work she does through the organization. And I also meet OA, Anna and Aizen, all refugees who are currently living in Malaysia, who will share a bit about their circumstances that brought them to Kuala Lumpur. Welcome to the show, Yolanda. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yolanda, could you just share a little bit about the Malaysian Social Research Institute? Who founded it? How did it really get started?
The Malaysian Social Research Institute is one of the oldest NGOs in Malaysia. Actually, it was founded in Singapore before Malaysia and Singapore split. Mm-hmm. It's 50 years old, and it was founded by Alijah Jordan, who was a lady from the United States and who was living in Malaysia. And she founded the Malaysian Social Research Institute to do research on social issues done by Malaysians, not just by people from other countries. That was the idea. Later, she started to support the Palestinian refugees living in Lebanon, especially those who were orphans. And then she founded a sponsorship program for refugee kids in Lebanon. So Malaysians sponsor kids so they can go to kindergarten and also to a school in Lebanon.
Okay. How did her initiative move from research to helping the refugee children?
Well, I think the founder was always interested in helping those who were needed. And also she has a very strong relationship with Palestinians. When she heard that the Palestinians were really suffering of hunger and they didn't have doctors or anybody to take care of them during the difficult times, she set up a team of doctors to go to Palestine to help them, and also because it's a social issue as well. So I think that was the idea. And from the relationship with Palestinians, the Malaysian Social Research Institute started to help refugees, Palestinians coming to Malaysia. And from then it started to broaden up to help minority communities.
Right, and that now includes what, Syrians?
Right now, our biggest group is, we have at the center, we opened the center 2 years ago, and right now we have 557 families registered, around 1,500 to 1,800 people. Mm-hmm. The majority is the Afghan community. The second biggest group is the Iranian community. Then we have almost the same numbers of Iraqis, Palestinians, and Syrians. Now, it's very interesting to see that a lot of the Palestinians and Iraqis, they are coming from Syria. So it's the second time they are refugees. It's really hard also for them. And we have also small groups from Pakistan, Somalia, Sudan, Eritrea. So very small. Yemen also.
Okay. We'll go into a little bit more about the refugees in a short while. But Yolanda, what got you interested? I mean, you come from Ecuador. You're hardly a refugee yourself. What got you wanting to contribute to the Malaysian Social Research Institute?
Well, I'm a sociologist by profession. Mm-hmm. So when I moved here with my husband, I really wanted to work. So I'm an expat, but I'm an expat that wanted to work. So
that's always the case, isn't it?
Yes,
there's so many expatriate women who can contribute to the economy, but unfortunately you can't.
Yeah, but I think, well, later I will tell you about a lot of the expats who are becoming volunteers in our center, and I think they are doing a wonderful job, because being volunteers is not easy. You don't get a salary, but you do a wonderful job. You can make really a change. Mm-hmm. But what got me into, when I arrived here, I was really looking for an NGO that was working for the society. I really like to work in local NGOs, because I think, I strongly believe that the resources are used in such a way that they benefit those who need it. The contrary of bigger NGOs, that because of the bureaucracy, also a lot of the money goes into the admin thing. Mm-hmm. Just to let you know, like the Malaysian Social Research Institute just have like 6 staff maybe, and we are supporting a huge group of refugees.
How many?
Yeah. At the center, I think, is around 2,000 right now. The exact number is 557 families. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge number of families.
When you say center, what do you mean?
Okay, the center is located in Ampan Point, and then we have two floors, two top floors in a shop house. Over there, we run four programs. The family healthcare program that supports the refugees, providing them primary healthcare and counseling, and also helping them to get referrals to the public hospitals. We have the second biggest program is the education program. And this is because refugees cannot access public schools in Malaysia. Yep. If they don't access a school, we have kids who haven't been in a school for 4 or 5 years. That is already a life for a kid. So we are providing education right now for around 80 kids. And the next August 19, we will open up the new center. It will be only for housing the school. And we are hoping to have at least 100 kids. Now we have 50 kids more in waiting lists. So those who need education, is the number is much bigger than what we can offer, but we will try to accommodate as many as possible. Then also we have vocational training. We have a group called Cinta in Malay, love. My only few words in Malay, I'm sorry.
It's always so, the start, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, food. I can tell you a lot of things in Malay about food. But it's called Cinta, and this is a group of 45 women who do handicrafts. So the woman, we help them to use their skills to do things that we can sell, and then they can get an income. But also really is helping them to get a skill, so when they are resettled, they can use this skill to make a living.
Who funds all of this? It sounds like a pretty big project.
Yeah. And then, also we have emergency support, and by this, the main need is food. So, for example, this month we are giving food to more than 82 families who need food. Through food kits. Then we have little programs like the Giving a Box project. Is this year we are giving gifts to almost 300 kids for Raya, because our majority of the refugees who are registered as Muslims, they celebrate Raya. And also we have another program that is called Adopt a Family. So if you want, you can adopt a refugee family. This is not a legal adoption, it's just providing them with support.
Right.
Yeah, all the programs are sponsored by the Malaysian Social Research Institute, and we also get donations. For example, the food support is all coming by donations, thanks to Malaysians or also the expat community who support us. And lately also the STAR, the Do Good volunteers, they are giving us almost 70 food parcels to provide food to the refugees.
Right. How would you describe these families, Yolanda?
Depends of the groups, I think. For example, the Afghan refugees, a lot of them are coming from Iran, others from Afghanistan. So they have been refugees before. I think the other groups, Iraqis, Syrians, Palestinians, they are very well-educated people. They have master's degrees, doctoral degrees, and it's very difficult for them to become refugees.
Yeah.
For example, the Syrians is the biggest group that we have at the moment, arriving at the moment. And they are suffering a lot because they are coming from the war zone, arriving to a country that they thought it was going to provide them a possibility to work and use their skills, but sadly they cannot do that. So can you imagine a family like yours or mine living with their jobs and enjoying, you know, being productive? Now they are like in limbo. We call it in limbo because they cannot go back. They cannot move forward. They cannot work. They cannot send the kids to school. And so their life becomes really difficult.
Okay, Malaysia, we know, does not recognize refugees. I mean, in my opinion, if we are not able to afford them these needs, why do we host them in the first place?
Well, that is always a big question. Everybody asks me why they come here. I think a lot of them come here because it's a Muslim country and they think they will find support. The problem is that because Malaysia is not a signatory of the 1951 Convention on Refugees, they don't allow refugees to work. Now, Malaysian Social Research Institute also is one of the members of the Migration Working Group, and this is a coalition of NGOs. And the thing that we always say is, like, at least it will be really useful if the Malaysian government would provide them a temporary work permit. That will be already huge for them. Huge, huge for them. And also it will be productive for the country, I think.
And I think children should be allowed to go to school. You know, and the other thing is they're not entitled to medical benefits or, you know, medical services.
Yeah. For example, the refugees who have already the UNHCR refugee card, who have been already recognized by this organization, they can access public healthcare. They pay the foreign rate minus 50%. So they give them 50% of the foreign rate, not the local rate. So that is already expensive. But if you think those coming from Syria, some of them, they have the first appointment to go to UNHCR in October 2015. The first appointment. So Then after the first appointment, sometimes they use 1 year to get your car.
Yeah.
So maybe by 2016, it will be the first time they are allowed to have a 50% discount.
That's a long time.
When we have pregnant women arriving, also mm-hmm. kids, the elderly also is a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if these refugees are not recognized, Yolanda, then how do you run this center without fear of, you know, enforcement coming to knock at your door?
Well, I think that is always, we always fear that someday it will come. I think the Malaysian government has stated that NGOs or private organizations or faith-based organizations can run schools, for example, for the refugees, mm-hmm. and they will allow them to provide education to refugees, but they won't support the education. So I think at least that is a big step, that at least NGOs, not just MSRI, but other organizations can provide healthcare and education to refugees.
We're discussing it's our World Refugee Day special. This is the Sahabat Support Centre and the Malaysian Social Research Institute. We're discussing the plight of some of the refugees in this centre. With me, Yolanda Lopez. She's the Programme Officer at the Malaysian Social Research Institute. When we come back, we'll find out how these refugees, what they have been up to the last couple of years, and a lot more regarding their living conditions on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, it is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. Yolanda Lopez, Programme Officer at the Malaysian Social Research Institute, with me. We're discussing the plight of some refugees here in Malaysia. It is World Refugee Day today. Earlier on, we spoke about how Malaysia does not recognise refugees and hence it's sort of a knock-on effect as to, you know, the problems for these individuals. Yolanda, you mentioned that these individuals coming through are highly educated, some with master's degrees, pretty much from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Palestine, as well as Syria. Are other Asian neighbours the same in terms of dealing with refugees and asylum seekers, Yolanda?
I think Thailand, for example, has a big population of Myanmar refugees. Just to make a note, we say that we support minority communities because among the 102,000 refugees living in Malaysia, 91%, I think, are from Myanmar, mm-hmm. and the rest is from minority communities. That is why we say the Sahabat Support Centers helps the minority communities. I think in Thailand, the majority is also Myanmar refugees. I think in Indonesia also you have several refugees from Afghanistan who have been traveling to Indonesia.
Okay. Yeah. Many of them are waiting to go to third countries. What are their hopes, Yolanda?
That is a very good question. I think if you just make your maths, there is 100, let's say just 100,000 refugees in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And the UNHCR has like around 8,000 places for resettlement. So in 1 year, only 8,000 have the chance to go to another country, mm-hmm. and this can change. So we have families who have been living in Malaysia for 7 years, and they haven't been able to get resettled. We have families who have been here 4 or 5 years. So really, if you see the bigger picture, as your program is called,
yes.
What happened with a kid who arrived here when he or she is maybe 6, and they are here 7 years without education? By the time they move, they are 13. I think that is already a life almost lost on education,
yeah.
because you cannot access proper education. And the same with the adults. Just imagine like those who come here as teenagers, 17 years old. They are here 6 years, 7 years. They are 24. And if you see a little bit deeper into their culture, is the time the girls need to get married.
That's right.
If they don't get resettled, even that, sometimes we just take it for granted, the ability to choose if you want to get married or not. A lot of the refugee women who are 27, they say, my age is gone, I cannot even get married. So it's interesting to see a little bit farther and into the families what is going on.
How do they survive 6-7 years?
That is a huge question. Everybody say if they don't get into trouble, and UNHCR asks them, don't get into trouble. But when you talk to the refugees, they this is what they tell me. They say, how I am not going to get into trouble? In the first place, I need to feed my family.
Yeah.
So I need to work, but they don't allow me to work. So already I'm doing something wrong by working and trying to bring some food to my family.
It's a complete roadblock, isn't it, for them?
Yeah.
So do you even see a solution, Yolanda?
I No, I think it's very difficult. Yeah. Very, very difficult. Because very difficult situation.
I'm just thinking, I mean, what you do at the Malaysian Social Research Institute is great. I mean, you're helping them, you're trying to educate the children, you know, provide them with some kind of emergency services. But they cannot be totally dependent on you for 6-7 years.
Yeah, and also we cannot support the 550 families, really. We register 550, but we cannot provide services for all of them. I really think, like as I said before, if only the Malaysian government would provide them with a temporary work permit, a lot of the... Even maybe after some time I won't have a job because they won't need us.
Which is a good thing.
Because they are able to support themselves.
Yeah.
But if they cannot work, then it's a big problem.
Yeah, which is a good thing. If you're out of a job, that's a really good thing. I mean, it's in a good way.
Yes.
You know? Do you think Malaysians are becoming more aware about refugees living amongst
that
us?
That is something that we really try to do, try to teach the people about refugees. I just went to one of the colleges to give a talk about refugees, and I asked them, there are refugees in Malaysia? They say no. Some of them say yes. Then some say maybe 20. One say 100. I say you are very close, but it's 100,000 refugees living in Malaysia. So a lot of people get completely shocked. The other thing is a lot of people think refugees are lazy. Refugees are coming only to take advantage of our government. And I think it's really good to learn more about them and understand that they are not here for that. So I think it's really interesting. When you talk to Malaysians, a lot of them are becoming more aware of the situation and they really want to help. So a lot of the support that we are having is coming from Malaysians and also from the expat community that is learning, and through learning they are supporting more the refugees.
Okay. Yeah. Has this, obviously you're depending on public donations and things like that. Do you see more and more support coming in because of a better awareness?
I think better awareness, yes. Also, I think when they hear it, because a lot of them, they think they are coming to abuse the system, but when they hear that they are really into not schooling, no healthcare, the people become more aware and they want to support. Especially when you tell people that we have families who are really having nothing to eat. Mm-hmm. Or like a family was telling me, can you give me some bread? My kids were fighting for the bread. Then really people become more aware and they say, wow, you know, I can really donate maybe some rice, sugar. We have a list of items that if people would like to donate, they donate to us. We are sure that the families are getting some, at least some of the food that they need.
Right. And how do we get in touch with you?
You can just go to the MSRI webpage. It's www.msri.org.my. Mm-hmm. And also you can email me. I hope I had a lot of emails. Yeah, my email is yolanda@msri.org.my.
Okay, I understand Malaysia is receiving, and as you mentioned earlier, many refugees from Syria. And you have released a report, the MSRI and the SSC. You've released a report which says refugees from Syria suffer in Malaysia. Why is that? I mean, are they suffering more than the rest, or would you say it's pretty much the same?
I think it's just different because they are just coming from the war zone. So it takes time for them to adjust to being a refugee. It's not easy to become a refugee because they are not accustomed even to come and ask for food. For them, that is something really new, not being able to support their own families mm-hmm. and asking for food. That is already, it takes a lot out of their dignity and out of their humanity. So I think that is really strong. Also, I think it's because a lot of people think that Syrians are suffering in Syria and in the neighboring countries. And this is a way to tell them, listen, Syrians are also here. Also, for example, Malaysia has a huge network of support to Palestinians in Gaza and in the West Bank. But when you tell them there is Palestinians here in Malaysia, refugees, they become really shocked. They didn't know. So that is kind of creating awareness about they are here. Mm-hmm. We can do something here.
Yeah. Recently we had Myanmarese clashing. Do you find that a problem amongst the refugees that you're helping, the minorities?
I think no. And we have, for example, in the classrooms, we have kids from Iran, from Syria, from Pakistan, from Palestine, from different countries. And I think that is more like normal problems among kids, like, kids having different interests, but not among nationalities. We haven't seen that. And that is something that we really try to run all our programs, not based on nationality, but based on the needs. And because we always tell them, you share something. you share being a refugee, mm-hmm. and being a refugee is hard. So the best thing you can do is to support each other instead of having conflict. So up to now, we haven't had any conflict among the communities.
What about the adult refugees?
No, it's okay. It's the same. The thing is the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is an essay writing class among the programs, and we will be hearing from some of the refugees reading out their stories. What sparked the interest to actually have an essay writing?
Yeah, this is a program that we did together with another organization, mm-hmm. and it started as a photo voice project. So what we did is to give the refugees a camera, and they could take pictures regarding their life in Malaysia. And then we have a photo exhibition together with our film festival, Refugees and Migrants Film Festival, that was held on November in the annex. So May, who helped us with the writing part of the project, later we say, okay, let's give the refugees a class on writing, because it's really interesting what they have inside. Also because it's somehow a way for them to release their stress through writing. So we did that with different refugees from different communities, Iraq, Syria, Sudan, Pakistan, and today you will have one boy from Iraq, another man from Syria, and a girl from Iraq mm-hmm. reading their stories.
Have the participants sort of, have they benefited from penning down their stories? Very interesting story.
I think it's interesting if you do it properly. It's not just asking them to tell the story. We have a counselor together with them to help them. Because when you start to remember and to dig a little bit onto your stories, it could be very, very shocking for yourself. Mm-hmm. So you need somebody to guide you through the writing process, through the photos, and also through counseling. So it's not just take pictures and tell me your story. It's not just taking their stories to use them. Mm-hmm. It's helping them to through the process so they are able to tell the story. And a lot of them, they are so empowered by this, because they are able to tell their stories in their own words.
Okay, why have you come forward to talk about this on World Refugee
Day? I think it's really important for the people to learn more about refugees, and only when you learn more about what is really happening, you will change your perception about them. I think a lot of people really have negative perceptions about refugees, especially after the clashes, because when you hear on the news about clashes among refugees, then you generalize, you tend to generalize,
yes.
and that is something that we all do.
Yeah.
So I think it will be good, to learn more about the real situation instead of just assuming things, and through learning, support them. Not maybe with financial support or anything, just by knowing who they really are mm-hmm. and their suffering and understanding their situation.
If you'd like to help these refugees from minority refugee groups, the Afghanistans, Iranians, Iraqis, Palestinians, Syrians, I mean, do get in touch with the Malaysian Social Research Institute. Their website is msri.org.my. And if you'd like to get in touch with Yolanda, your email address is yolanda@msri.org.my. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So it is World Refugee Day. That was Yolanda Lopez, the program officer of the Malaysian Social Research Institute. Coming up, we'll find out more about the three refugees, actually, and they're going to be telling me their story here in Malaysia on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, it is World Refugee Day, and the Malaysian Social Research Institute organized a essay writing class among the programs for refugee children. And with me is 23-year-old Aizen. Aizen actually came from Iraq a couple of years ago, and Aizen was one of the participants in that essay writing program. Aizen, I just wanted to ask you, why did you decide to write?
I just felt it's something I need to do. I held so much, could say, fear, frustration, anger, sadness, loneliness. I just needed something, either that or I just continue build up until the point of getting exploded in a bad way.
Yep.
Writing the essay helped me just relax and calm down and just basically look in the world from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Earlier on, Yolanda spoke about how counselors worked with you. I mean, were there times when you just had to stop and, couldn't write?
There was a couple of times I just felt, that's it, I just need to stop. This is the last piece and that's it. But as I wrote, more emotion rose, more I had to remember some things I thought I forgot And there was a time I wanted to stop, but somehow something just kept on driving me further and further into writing.
Mm-hmm.
I just did not know what that is or why or how. I just like feel compulsory. I need to continue writing for someone, something.
Right.
Something drove me in.
Right. Has that made a difference in how you feel about being a refugee here in Malaysia?
Yeah, it made me realize that I'm a refugee, but that doesn't mean I have to like stay like this. I have to work to improve my status, improve my life, the life of my family, the life of my mother and father and sister. And I should not look life from one perspective. I should look at it from a new perspective of hope, not of that of desperation and fear and just like a stone in a river of time.
Mm-hmm. You want to read your essay for me? It's titled My Best Friends. Go ahead, Aizen.
Yeah. When I came here with my family, I left my friends and everything I loved it back in Iraq. Every time I met someone new, I wondered how they viewed me or if they would like me for who I am. At first, I did not make any friends. I did have classmates and lab friends, but I did not feel they were my true friends. I told myself, who need them? All I need is my mom, my dad, and my sister. But as time passed, fear and loneliness started to grow. After a while, I met true friends. They did not even ask who I am, or why I'm here, or what I'm going to do for them. All they needed was for me to reach out, and I did that. Now I have two best friends. One is like my younger brother. I met him on Facebook and we started to share some photos about anime and cosplay and always joking around and tries to keep a smile on everybody's faces. The other is like my older brother, the brother I always wanted. We play online games together and we gave advice on life. He gave me advice on life. Not only he really cool on the outside, but on the inside, he can be your best friend, your teammate, or just your friend. One day, on an outing with my brother, little brother, I met a girl. She has a long black hair, brown eyes that can see your soul through your soul and pain. Inside, she's like the flower that you can never stop looking. Loved her smile and her open heart, but most of all, I love her open mind. I was afraid at first that thinking a girl like her, she must have a boyfriend. Last month, I took a leap of faith and I told her how I felt about her. She didn't seem surprised at all. She gave me a kiss on the cheek and said to me, "It's about time, fool."
Thank you very much for joining me today, Aizen. That was Aizen, who's a refugee from Iraq, sharing his essay titled My Best Friends on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, it is World Refugee Day, and I have the other refugee with me from Syria. His name, OA. OA, how old are you?
I'm 34.
34, okay. Just very quickly, before we go into your essay, and you were part of the essay writing program which was organized by the Malaysian Social Research Institute. Oe, how did you feel when you finished penning down your thoughts?
I felt comfortable because I can express about myself, also about the situation, maybe my individual case, but we can understand, or you can understand, that is a general case, not just about my situation. I'm speaking about maybe the Syrian people here, because we have the same feelings and the same maybe background or same culture, so I think the same dilemmas or obstacles.
Do you have hope that, you know, one of these days you will in fact find a third country to go and make a life?
For me, I hope go back to my home again. Maybe I'm not looking forward just for the resettle to get the resettled in the third country, but I prefer go back to my home. Mm-hmm. So the third solution now, because we are here like refugees,
yeah,
and we cannot go back to our home. So this the third solution, go resettled. My hope, go back to my home.
How long have you been here?
More than 1 year.
Okay. Your essay is titled The Tunnel of Waiting. Do you want to read it for me, OA?
Yeah. It is 10 months since I entered the tunnel of waiting, or what I call my situation here in Malaysia. I remember all the details of my first interview at UNHCR. Since then, I have been a refugee and asylum seeker. I woke up the next day with confused emotions. The first thing I did was look up on the internet the meaning of asylum. I wondered how I would introduce myself to society. I asked myself a lot of questions. Will I sing in the street on the way back to the house as I used to do in my country without shame? Will I get job according to my experience and education? Will I see life as before, full of happiness and enjoyment? In those days, I read a lot of poems about refugees and asylum, and I worried that my life will become an appropriate story for a poem. Recently, a policeman stopped me and asked me for my passport. I tried to speak in Spanish so he wouldn't think I was a refugee. They considered refugees here illegal. Long after he left, I still felt the horizon very near to my chest and the clouds following me. The issue of refugees is a global one. While it most immediately affects developing nations, there is a strong argument that industrialized countries should help by allowing more migration. This is partly a moral issue and partly in the economic self-interest of industrialized nations. We live in a global village, and it is no longer possible to ignore what happens on the other side of the world. Today, I live more in my memory than in the present. When I drink a cup of coffee, I remember how it was drunk on the balcony of my house with a beautiful view of Damascus. My family and friends with me.
Wait, are you here alone or are your family members here with
you? I live with my family.
You live with your family?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing your story with me.
Thank you.
That was OA on his essay titled The Tunnel of Waiting, this World Refugee Day on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You know, Anna, when you decided to be a part of this essay writing program, I mean, did it help you in any way to get over what you've been through? I mean, you come from Iraq, yeah. Your family moved to Jordan, yeah. You were only 3 when you left Iraq.
Yeah.
When you wrote this essay, I mean, did it help you in any way to sort of recover from what you've actually been through?
It's nice writing something like about what you've been through and having someone like listening to you,
mm-hmm.
because we have like nobody to listen to, like no one can listen to you even, like, because I have no many friends, only like my mom is my closest friend, so like it's nice to have someone been through the same things as you have been, like in the group we were all like refugees, like been in the same situations, mm-hmm. together.
In Jordan, did you go to school?
Yeah. We had school. My father friends, he helped him to like, because my father was cooking, so he was cooking with his student, and he tell him like, oh, you have 2 kids, are they in school? And he tell him like, no.
Mm-hmm.
So he tell him like without the salary, I will pay for your like kids' school. So at first like, oh yeah, like we were happy going to school and everything, and I finished until like my 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm supposed to go to college.
That's right.
Yeah, but my family cannot afford college here.
Sure.
Yeah.
And your parents don't go to work, so you very much depend on public donations and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, anything like this. That's the only way like we can, okay. like anyone can help support from this side, anything. Yeah. Yeah.
And you were part of the Malaysian Social Research Institute's essay writing program, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And the title of your essay is The Sky is Bigger. Would you like to just read it for me?
Okay. I wrote it because the sky is like, it's like because the different from the before, the like the sky here is, I don't know, it's like bigger than from my country and in Jordan is right. different.
Okay. That's very interesting to know, actually.
Yeah, even when I read it, like, they tell me, like, how is the sky bigger?
I will pay more attention when I travel. Yeah. You know, to just look up in the sky and see how different
it
is.
I think because it's more close area, and here, like, the space is bigger, mm-hmm. like, even, I don't know.
Okay, go ahead, your essay.
I still remember the first day I came to Malaysia. I saw for the first time in my life really high buildings, new faces. I think even the sky looked bigger and clearer. The clouds were close, and I felt as though I could touch them. I remember how scared I was. The first years in Malaysia were really hard for me. I was only 15 when I came. I have my mother and my brother with me, but I still felt alone even though I was not. I was born in Iraq. At age 3, I had to leave. I don't remember why. After that, I was living in Jordan before I came to Malaysia. When you become a refugee, people look at you differently, even though they don't know anything about you or why you become a refugee. They don't know how hard it is to leave your country where you thought you would live there forever. They treat you differently, look at you differently, as if you are not human like them. Back in the days, I think people used to care for one another, help each other. I'm talking about the everyone in the world, not just my country and here. That now everyone cares about themselves. They don't like to help. They are not very nice to you, always lying. If you want directions, they won't help you. I don't know why. People should treat refugee well because you never know. Tomorrow, that could be your life.
Thank you very much, Anna, for sharing your story with me. That was Anna, who's a refugee from Iraq, on her essay titled The Sky's Bigger, This World Refugee Day, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.